accession number 32122, Rule 2.
Talking about this threat of nuclear apocalypse, the government responses, I mean, do you remember the sort of booklets they were issuing and the advice?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that I used quite a lot was the Protect and Survive booklet, which we think was supposed to be given free to everybody in the country. Government booklet, which told you what to do in the event of a nuclear war, with little funny little illustrations, and it was so totally ludicrous. It had things like, in the event of a nuclear war, take down your net curtains because they might set on fire. And the last line of it was, after you hear the all clear, you can go and resume normal activities. And that's after the Third World War, presumably. So it was completely mad booklet that was given out to people. So I did versions of it with a skeleton reading it, and with the image being sort of burnt through a map and different things, So they'd built up this mad idea through Protect and Survive. And there was a great writer and campaigner called E.P. Thompson, who started the European European CND version, END it was called, and he read a book called Protest and Survive that became a very sort of important booklet.
So the government, I mean, they were doing something, but just to be seen to be doing something.
Yeah, just to be seen to be doing something. Yeah, they weren't actually. By that time, there wasn't any great anti-nuclear movement in the Labour Party one felt that had been quashed, so it had to come from ordinary people, And the amazing thing is the horror of nuclear weapons still exists. I mean, Obama's now talking about reducing them, which is great, but there's thousands and thousands of these things, and they're telling other countries not to develop them, and there's no way that won't happen unless the West starts getting rid of them,
It's interesting that you talked about using skeletons and the sort of horror of it, because, as you say, a lot of people are sort of distanced from that.
Yeah.
They know about Hiroshima, sort of.
People
don't really connect the mushroom cloud with...
No, with the actual effects of it, yeah. I know, I think that's, how much of that is an accident or not, one doesn't know, but it is this thing that you mainly see very anodyne images of the nuclear issue. You don't see, you don't see images of Hiroshima, the most horrific burns and what actually happened in Hiroshima. You don't see it. And I don't think seeing it puts people off doing anything about it. I think it actually encourages people to, protest about it.
We talked a bit about Britain's relationship with America during the Cold War and afterwards. Have you done any work reflecting on Britain as the junior partner and all that sort of thing?
I'm not sure if I did specific montages. The main thing, I did a lot of images showing. I did a lot of images showing Britain as a sort of aircraft carrier for America, which is what it is in terms of American bases here, and because the American bases in England are actually run, they have their own, some under American law. Because a couple of years ago, I was working in Norwich on a residency, and we went to Lakenheath, which is where the bombers went off to Iraq, and it's an enormous American base, 30,000 people, and it is American land, in the middle of Norfolk. So that's always been something that I've always tried to show to people. People almost don't know about it, that we are an aircraft carrier, for American military.
What's your feeling generally about America? I mean, Americans when you meet them.
Americans are great, but the American government, the American policy and the American, you know, hopefully there's something different coming. But I mean, through the Bush years and through the Reagan years, you know, it just seems like that they're. I mean, one of the first series of work I did was about Chile and about the military coup, which was set up by the CIA. So, and America does, you know, it used to be, especially in Latin America, they destroyed all the great sort of democratic social movements were destroyed by America because they thought they'd lose control, you know, and they're thinking the same way now with Chavez and people. So, I mean, I've always been against, you know, American power in that way. And but that's nothing, you know, that's not connected to being anti-American, which has always been, you know, once criticised for being anti-American. But it's not, it's about the power of the country, you know.
What about your attitude to the Soviet Union during the Cold War?
Well, I was always against what was totally against. I mean, I was allied with, I suppose it would be called a Trotskyist outlook, that saying that the Soviet Union was, you know, it was a complete dictatorship in that sense. And obviously, if you worked against nuclear weapons things, then you were labelled as being a, you know, a Soviet sympathiser. But there's no way that it was, and we were actually, people around, you know, we were more critical of what was going on there than probably people in the straight sort of media and things, you know.
Because some people were quite naive, weren't they, about what was going on in the Soviet Union, or didn't want
to. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and you get people like, you know, historians like Hobsbawm, who stayed in the Communist Party right up to the end. But most of the people, you know, people like E.P. Thompson, who was, I was involved with, they'd all split from the Communist Party, because he was a generation that split in the 50s, I think, after Hungary, and, you know, and then a lot of people split after Czechoslovakia. But yeah, I was never a supporter of the Russians at all, you know. Even though I actually ended up in the High Court with for CND, because someone had I'd done an image of Britain with a CND symbol around it, and it had been taken by a very right wing pressure group, and they put a hammer and sickle on it and used the image. We were tried to sue them for copyright of my image, but we lost it. Yeah, you know, the judge said my thing wasn't a work of art. Which is interesting.
Which year was that?
I can't remember what year it was. But it is a mad case, but they ended up saying theirs was a work of art and mine wasn't, or something.
Were you actually a member of CND?
No, I don't think I've ever joined anything officially. I've never been in the Labour Party. Oh, no, I don't think I officially joined it, but I just worked with it. I don't think artists, in a sense, should join organisations, maybe, but just. I mean, my idea as an artist is, you know, I've done a lot of the other things like Amnesty and things. Is to use what skills I've got to further, you know, anti-war things or human rights issues, and not actually to get involved in the mechanics of the organisation. The only way I get involved is through the debate at the beginning, to try and persuade them to use the work, you know. And one of the sad things is about organisations now, they go off to advertising agencies, because agencies will let their young copywriters do stuff for free for protest groups. So that, and obviously an advertising agency can get the work out in the street, you know, it's got the whole. So in a sense, they've gone towards corporate people rather than artists that are sympathetic, which is a shame, I think. You know.
When did that start to happen?
It began in the 90s, I think, you know, when things got more corporate. So I mean, things like Saatchi, I mean, they've done hundreds of things for charities and Amnesty and things like that. And they do them for free, so you can't. It's difficult to argue. I mean, I would do it for free, but I wouldn't be able to get it out. I haven't got the mechanism to get it out of my hoardings and to do it, you know. Yeah. So it's a problem, I think.
What else was I going to ask you? Do you think since the end of the Cold War, artists have become less engaged in politics, or do you think it's stay the same?
No, I think they have become less engaged. Yeah. And well, I think that, you know, art's got very bound up with money and it's become a whole industry. When I started, there were, you know, 3 contemporary art galleries in London, probably, and now it's this whole network, which is, in fact, is now changing again because of the credit crunch. But I think, especially in England, artists tend to be, and writers, they don't tend to engage a lot with big issues. And I think it's to do with English culture and English art school training, you know, that there is this idea that if you make art, you have to make it very layered and subtle, and you can't say what you think through art. And I think that's, yeah, I think that's a great shame, you know.
And do you actually remember the end of the Cold War? I mean, can you remember the period when the wall was coming down?
Yeah, well, I can remember the, I mean, you know, there was this fantastic jubilation. What I did was, I was doing work for the Guardian at that time, sort of freelancing, and I said I'd like to do some, at the end of the week, I can't remember what day, but anyway, I remember going on there on the Friday and said I'd like to do an image, and then they said, well, bring it in by Sunday and we'll use it on the Monday. So I got a photograph of the Berlin, I couldn't get a photograph at that time, it was quite difficult to get imagery, so I used a photograph of the Berlin Wall, and then photographed the wall in near where I live in Stoke Newington, a broken bit of wall, and stuck it onto the Berlin Wall, and then photographed 2 hands shaking hands through the wall as if they were knocking giant hands, and that went into the Guardian on the Monday with an article about it. So it was great to be able to do something, make an image about it and do it. Yeah, mark the moment at the exact time. Yeah.
What were your feelings at the time? Can you remember?
Yeah, well, I mean, it felt great jubilation. It felt like there was possibility of something very special happening, you know. And you felt that the countries that were broken from communism were actually going to develop in interesting ways, not just as sort of small-time capitalist countries. So that's what happened.
There's some debate about the American government backing art movements in America, abstract expressionism, way of fighting the Cold War.
Yeah.
Do you think that there was any equivalent in Britain during the Cold War? Sort of government sponsorship?
No, I don't think the British would ever think they could use. I mean, they did use magazines like Encounter, I think, was supposed to be CIA back in the literary magazine. But I don't know. I mean, do you know? I mean, I don't know of any. No. And the thing about the CIA, I mean, the American government and abstract expressionism, I mean, it's always been talked about.
Yeah.
But I never know if it actually, if they sat down and said, you know, I mean, in a way, the British Council is always exporting, you know, at that time, it was exporting Henry Moores all over the world by the dozen. and that, so there is that sense of it creating British culture, you know, a certain image of British culture. But then, you know, it's always ambiguous, because later, 20 years after that CND stuff, the British Council sent some of my stuff around the world with other imagery, like some of it was advertising for the Tories, to show that what democracy is about. So it worked.
How do you feel about that?
No, that's fine, yeah, because the work stands up on its own, you know. I mean, they didn't say that's what, but that's the obvious thing. They were sending it to countries. I mean, he went to South Africa, which is quite good, just at the time when, you know, they're breaking from apartheid. So it was that idea of choice and things, you know. So, yeah, I mean, the work, I mean, I only argue, you know, get upset if the work's used for the opposite purpose from which I did it, you know. Yeah.
So the Cold War ended, and you were obviously doing work about human rights. Was that what you carried on doing, with the political stuff sort of tailing off?
Well, I started making more sort of installational work, and I did quite a lot of work about homelessness, and then I just did work about, I suppose it became more about finance. So I did a lot about stock markets and sort of hands ripping up the Financial Times, and the word got more. I suppose it got more symbolic rather than. I mean, one of the things was the newspapers, the things I'd worked for. They stopped sort of using. Montage became more of a fun thing, so I got asked to do illustrations for the holiday supplements in newspapers rather than the political one. So I just thought it wasn't worth pursuing it. So I suppose it became more gallery based.
Okay.
What I did, but it still was as political, you know.
But was the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, was that, did things start getting more political again?
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time making work about Iraq, and I worked with a younger artist who's worked digitally, and we made a lot of photo montages and paintings, and for the last 5 years we've done tons of work about that, and that's gone into exhibitions and also as posters and installations and things. Yeah, so that brought it back in that sense, but finding ways to use digital technology, which I can't do myself, but working with someone, collaborating, is great for that.
Do you still do using the original kind of sticking and pasting, or have you?
No, not in the same way. No. But I mean, people actually like the Tate bought a whole lot of the original, like the broken missile, because, and I never saw them as, I would never exhibit them as artworks originally, because I thought they were the means to make something. But now people are, especially young people, are really interested to see all the bits and pieces and bits of carpet stuck on the back and the roughness of it, you know.
In terms of the imagery during the Cold War, you've talked about the C&D logo, but was there anything else that you particularly admired or inspired you?
No, I don't think there was any particular imagery. I mean, I tend to make quite iconic, using slight images of barbed wire. I mean, I did a lot about solidarity. I was a supporter of Polish Solidarity Movement, and I did work with their logo, the Solidarność logo, and I sort of encased it in barbed wire to show what Russia was intending and things like that. So, certain things like Solidarność, and they had this amazing logo, so I worked with that as an image. And otherwise, it's looking for iconic images that people can recognise very quickly, because the stuff goes, it is very quick. You have to be very quick if you're in the public realm, because everyone's bombarded by adverts. And what I can do is very small, economically very small, so it has to get to people quickly.
You've talked a lot about how we're overwhelmed with imagery the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
That must make it very challenging.
Yeah, yeah, we are. We're overwhelmed. I mean, more and more, like, advertising is extraordinary. You look in a mirror in a toilet and suddenly an advert starts coming through and things like that. I mean, we're bombarded by imagery, so... It's if you want to work in the public realm outside the gallery, it is, you're working in a tiny little area, really. And it is incredibly, incredibly difficult. It's very difficult. And of course, now a lot of younger people are using the web as a way to get material out. But I still think the actual physical thing of a poster is really important. And the actual, seeing an imagery on the street is different from seeing it privately on your computer.
So the public realm is something that you still want your work to be out.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And there has been, one of the things, there's this whole street art movement, which has become a bit twisted by the market with Banksy and everything. But, I mean, there are, at the time of Iraq, there were tons of things all over the world using sort of stencils and that young people do straight into on the street. So it's, it goes on.
Did you go on the anti-war march? Anti-Iraq war?
Yeah, the big one, yeah. Yeah. Well, that was originally how I got involved in making work about it, because I went on the enormous march, with 1.5 million, however many other people. And then, of course, it had no effect. I didn't think it had any effect. The war happened. And then it didn't turn into a sort of movement at all. You know, there was just, so it was a question of what does one do to register one's protest about it. So I decided to start making art about it, you know, and using that as a way. And I think you know, especially the place that I showed it in Glasgow, and it just got a lot of support. I think people wanted to see work that was against the war, like in a gallery sort of context. It was quite, you know, they wanted to identify with it, so it was quite supportive in that way.
Is the nuclear threat something that still engages you?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's very difficult to get people engaged in it. It's almost become acceptable, which is quite extraordinary, you know, because of the whole terrorism threat and all that. So, but I mean, like the image of the broken missile image is still being, you know, still being used by CND. They after the Trident. I mean, I did some work when Trident, the government announced the Trident was going to be conditioned, and they're going to spend billions. But it didn't turn into a mass movement in that way. Yeah. So, I mean, it's very difficult nowadays.
Okay, I'm just going to check that. I think that's everything I wanted to cover. I mean, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you think is important to talk about? No, I think that covers quite a lot of it, I think. One thing I wanted to ask you, I mean, one of the new sort of mass movements is about climate change.
Yeah.
And I wanted if you, that was something that you worked.
Yeah, I'm doing quite a lot about climate, trying to, about climate change, and I'm doing a sort of performance thing in the city in a month's time, which is like, which is talking about climate change, and I'm working with globes. You can see one behind you, darkened globes, and yeah, I mean that is a crucial, crucial subject, and one that one needs to find imagery. It's a very difficult one to, because it's very nebulous in that sense. So it's very important to find images for climate change, I think. And it's one of the areas that I know with my students, you know, especially younger BA students, they're very involved in that, and really it's affecting their work, not just in terms of imagery, but in terms of what materials they use, and making something that's very sort of un-Damien Hirst type, you know, very sort of down to earth, I think. Yeah.
And you said you do a lot of teaching. How it must be strange for your students, some of whom were probably born after the Cold War ended.
Yeah.
Do they still relate to the Cold War imagery and the work that you did in the 60s?
Yeah, well, I think in the 90s, when there was this whole sort of, I think, you know, I did lectures and things, and I felt a bit of a dinosaur. They didn't really relate to it. But I think the war in Iraq, after the invasion of Iraq, it's certainly, young people started thinking again about what war's about and what the country is about. I think it's changed consciousness, you know. I think, and when I do talks now and things, I think young artists are quite concerned with trying to find ways to make more sort of socially engaged work. Some of them, you know, I think it's sort of come back, and as a sort of reaction to what happened with the art market taking over, and you know, all these millions being made, and which became depressing, you know, because that's how people started judging art. Yeah.
Okay.